Hello, everyone. This is Craig D. Lindsay, a.k.a. Uncle Krizzle, a.k.a. Black Larry David, a.k.a. Tavis Not So Smiley, a.k.a. Unemployed Mayweather, a.k.a. Fat Greasy, a.k.a. Theodorus Humplick, a.k.a. a bunch of things. And welcome to another enthralling edition of Motherfuckers I Know, the podcast, where I talk to motherfuckers I know because there are a few, and I need to talk to them every once in a while. And for today's Krizzlecast, I have with me once again, well, not so, once again, it's her first time here, but once again, another former high school classmate of mine. Yes, we used to roll together at Bel Air High School way back in the 90s when there was things in the 90s. But now she lives out of the country, and we'll talk about her various travels and exploits. Paula Lifshitz, is it, I presume?
Yes, Lifshitz.
Lifshitz. Welcome to the Krizzlecast, ma'am.
Thank you, sir. I'm honored to be here.
Thank you. And, once again, I just wanted to say I'm so glad to have you here, but I also apologize because we tried this a couple of times the week prior to recording this first time. I was in dire pain, and I couldn't really do anything. And plus, I had to write something, so I had to try to suppress that. And you do another time. And the second time, I was all ready for it. But while waiting for you, because like you're an hour ahead of me in where you're at, I fell asleep. And
oh my goodness.
Took a nap in by the time I woke up.
Did you pull an all-nighter?
Well, I wasn't saying all night, but I had just silently, I think I had like 3-4 hours of sleep, and I was doing a bunch of stuff early that morning. I had a job interview that I haven't heard from yet and everything, so I had to get a haircut. And so, right. But apart from that, yeah, just, that was, unfortunately, just went night-night. For a couple of hours, but I got you on the Skype line now, and we're recording this, and it's so good to hear from you. But before we get into anything, I just and as always, I like to at least do some research about some the people I'm talking to, and I'm just looking around Google to see what I know more for this conversation. And I went on the wikianswers.com, and they have a question: who is Paula Lifshitz? I've seen it, and the answer is Paula E. Lifshitz was born in 1976 in Argentina. She grew up in Houston, but was forced to flee from Mexican gangsters for her safety. She currently lives her life as best she can. Peace and love.
Oh, yeah. I wrote that.
Oh, you wrote that. Okay. Yeah, I was wondering, who put that up there. And,
Yeah, that was me. Because you know why? I'll tell you the story. Because somebody had asked another, who is Paula Lifshitz? And it had come up on the search engine that she was someone who had died, and I'm not sure what year.
Yeah.
And so I guess there was someone else, or I don't know what it was. And so that really made me mad, So I had to defend myself, which is why you got the middle initial there, the E.
Yeah.
Paul E. Lifshitz.
Well, at least you don't get mistaken for a sex offender.
No, that hasn't happened yet.
Well, it's happened to me.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. Apparently, got bored and Googled myself one night. Turns out, I think there's a Craig D. Lindsay or two that's on some sex offender lists.
Oh, no.
And just, it hasn't happened. Nobody, it's funny, it hasn't really, nobody has accused me of being a sex offender, but they just, I often get this feeling that just people just weirded out by me. I don't know if that's I often feel like I get the sex offender vibe from people, just weird. I live in neighborhoods where, you know, people are fancy and conservative and they've never really seen a black person before. So just like, and also because that, like, to get the suspiciousness going on. Like, the suspiciousness, combination of suspiciousness, and, like, oh, he's by himself, so, you know, watch out for your daughters.
Right. Yeah, well, I don't know. You're a character, you know, like, you're a lot to handle. You're a very strong personality, so maybe people just, I don't know, assume the worst, or people are very judgmental, you know?
Yeah, I would say they are.
Like, I remember the last time that I spoke to you, you were doing an interview, and I participated in that article about big girls, or girls formerly pretty girls,
yeah,
or something
yeah,
like
yeah.
that.
There's a column about why I find pretty people so irritating.
Yeah, well, that has a lot to do with it also. You know, people judge you just from, like, whether you're pretty or you're loud or you dress funny or whatever, you know?
Yeah. Well, I was trying to see how it came about because I was doing this piece. It's funny how back when I was doing that Collins and News and Observer, just, like, whatever was pissing me off at the time. Once you have that freedom to do that kind of stuff, you can write, you know, whatever you feel the need to write about at that moment, you write about it. And I was just like, pretty people were pissing me off, something fierce. So I was looking for pretty people or formerly pretty people or whatever. And, I got into college at you on Facebook and, all that, and I just was trying to see if you'd be interested in doing that.
Yeah, well, at the time, I was a big girl, but I'm happy to say I've actually lost almost 60 pounds in the past year.
Oh, so have I. So I know.
I've been keeping track of you on Facebook. I think that's great.
Yeah, it's weird. You find it interesting that... I found that losing weight is a good barometer to judge which people in your lives are self-centered assholes.
Yeah.
Because they can't. Because you know you've shedded. You're not the same person you was so long ago. But like you know, some people for some reason don't pick up on that because they're so into their own thing. Like you know, so like you get. I've noticed that about myself. I mean, how's it been for you?
Yeah, well, I have to say, some girls, I've actually lost a couple of friends, I think because they were like, they were the pretty girls, and then they got mad because now, you know, I'm not the fat, ugly girl anymore. I think there was a little bit of petty jealousy going on, like, you know, reverse discrimination or whatever.
Wait a minute, people actually... broke up with you because, real life
friendship. It wasn't like girlfriends, like relationship, but like a friend.
I was just thinking, just part ways with you.
Yeah, and I don't know if it was actually because of that or maybe just coincidentally, like maybe I changed a lot, so I no longer had much in common with these people. I don't know, but it's strange. But the other people have been very supportive. On the whole, people have been very supportive. And, you know, they're quick to say, you look great or, you know, good for you. How did you do it? I get a lot of that. You know, people want, like, some magic secret recipe for losing weight. And there really is no secret.
Mm-hmm. I mean, how did you do it?
Well, I quit drinking alcohol.
Yeah,
a year ago today. And I've just started eating better and smaller portions, and I started working out a lot, like regularly.
Yeah. Well, I found that, as you say, I cut back on the alcohol and I ate smaller portions and did some walking. Also, being absolutely broke and not affording to actually go out and eat that works in your favor as well.
Yeah, but not always, especially in the States where, you know, being broke leads to fast food, you know, McDonald's, Jack in the Box, Happy Meals, all that. And that's even worse for you.
Yeah, I know. I like, try to, you know, distance myself on that. But I did fall off the wagon and get a 20-piece McNuggets one time. But it's just like, but other than that, just like a... Yeah, I've just been trying to do small stuff. And it does show, I mean, just it is weird how things fit and everything. Yeah, it wasn't even about losing weight to show off some appearances or whatever, or just trying to fit in with anything. Like, if, you know, I've had back problems and I've had health concerns, and it was kind of like, you know, I had to make some kind of decision. I had to do something while I was waiting for work.
Something positive.
Yeah, so it's just like, you know, hey, the neighborhood is mine, so I will walk around it for an hour and hopefully, you know, do some other things to keep me occupied and hopefully get healthier.
Yeah, it's good. You know, you change your lifestyle and you feel a lot better for it.
Yeah, I mean, what was it exactly for you? Was it you change your lifestyle, change your plans or something? I mean, what was the point for you where you decided you need to lose weight?
Well, you know, I just saw myself and, like, I didn't look good. I didn't feel good. I wasn't very happy with my life. And I was like, what can I do? You know, I broke up with someone. I was in a relationship with this man, and that ended because, you know, he wasn't, like, committing to me. And I thought, you know, maybe if I treated myself better, if I looked better, if I respected myself more, maybe my next relationship will be better.
Uh-huh.
You know, it was like a whole chain of things leading to the ultimate goal of, like, self-improvement, you know, and just, like, living a better life in general with everything.
And so you get down there. Yeah, I've noticed, like, a couple of photos of you. You seem to be quite smaller, if I may say.
Yeah, I'm substantially smaller.
Oh, hopefully this will be the beginning of you taking, how should I say, more flattering photos of yourself.
Oh, why? You think my photos aren't very good?
Well, it's just like you just have the you seem to have that deer in the headlights look most of the time. It's like the eyes are really wide open and everything. It's just like the funny thing is like you take pictures of yourself is very, you know, odd. But when other people take pictures of you, you're gorgeous. You're happy. You see a lot more. You know, you make lovely photobomb faces.
What is a photo bomb?
Well, just when people just hop into the photos of people and just look like they just rear their head in and make a funny face or something like that.
Ah, yeah, okay. Yeah, you know, my sister used to tell me that too. She'd be like, don't do that with your eyes, and she'd start cracking up every time I, like, posed for a picture.
Yeah.
I guess I do some, I don't know, I guess I open my eyes real big, or I don't know, I'm just a weirdo, who knows.
Ah, well, it's funny because, like, if I remember distinctly from high school, you were one of the popular girls, you were a cheerleader and all that.
No, I wasn't a cheerleader, I was, like, student government.
Oh, student government, who the hell?
Yeah.
I distinctly remember women and girls in cheerleader outfits, I thought you were one of them.
No.
Well, yeah, but I mean, actually, I guess we should lead into, because the last time we did speak, you reminded me that you were my editor in the high school newspaper.
That's right, the TPP, the Three Penny Press.
Yes, I still have my T-shirt.
Awesome. I don't have my T-shirt anymore.
Yeah,
it didn't make it in the move.
Yeah. Okay, I wrote about sports during the fall, and then I went over to the entertainment in the spring. So I was like, "You're the was it entertainment?" I was
actually news, but I swear you were on the news staff for a while. Maybe you switched out.
I was kind of positioning myself. This was how I saw myself when I was writing for the paper. I wanted to be the writer at large. I wanted to be the the James Wolcott of the Three Penny Press. I'm just writing different things for different people, and just, yeah, that's, so I just, like, bounced around. I did sports, I did entertainment, I did op-ed pieces, I interviewed the one of the assistant principals, and that was interesting thing. And I dipped into many formats, beats, if you will.
So you knew from, like, early on that your love was journalism, that you wanted to be a writer, and you always knew?
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, as a thing I knew how to do. I couldn't rap, I couldn't play ball, so I was good with words, couldn't get to piece them together.
Good for you. I think it's good to have a passion in life.
Well, yeah, it's good to have a passion, but, these days, I don't know if, you know, the passion is leading any other passionate things.
My passion I discovered later in life. And in high school, I would just do a few doodles, like, you know, while I was taking notes in class and stuff. But, like, art is what I really love to do.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm happy about that. I just have a show, one painting in a really important place in Buenos Aires. So that's, like, my big break. I mean, it hasn't led to anything yet, but I'm pretty excited about that.
Well, wait a minute. Since we're trying to go back in our past here, just because I thought for sure you were you were a student in government, but I do distinctly remember you being somewhat popular.
Yeah, I was a popular girl.
So there was that. And how was I?
You were in my homeroom too, Craig, remember? We were in homeroom together.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. So you were talkative. And you know what's funny is you've always been Craig D. Lindsay, I remember. Yeah. The D. What does the D stand for?
Dwayne. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that mysterious D has followed you throughout your life.
Everybody followed me. I just put it there. So I thought it would be a nice affectation.
Yeah, it's a good way to, like, mark yourself, because, you know, maybe there's another Craig Lindsay, but what are the chances that he's a Craig D. Lindsay also?
Well, it turns out there's a Craig D. Lindsay, he's a sex offender, so it's a...
Oh, right.
Bitten me in the ass, so to speak. But
right.
I may have to go back to Craig Lindsay at some point, so... Yeah, I forget which homeroom was that. It was, like...
I think we had a couple of teachers.
Yeah.
But we had, I remember I used to get out of homeroom because I had to go do the morning announcements on Channel 1.
Oh, yes, yes. Oh, yeah, back when we had a closed circuit system in the school. And this, you know, this is back in the futuristic 90s where we went from the loudspeaker to playing, closed circuit on all the TVs all around the school. And they had that, and then, well, I distinctly remember it was K-Bell TV.
Yeah, that was the news show that the entertainment and the sports that they would do at during the lunch hour in the cafeteria.
Which, if I remember, nobody really paid attention to except me.
Yeah, nobody did, but it was so cool. You know, we all respected the K-Bell.
Yeah, I remember,
But nobody's cared. I liked going out to lunch.
Yeah. That's funny because I wanted, you know, I thought, like, K-Bell, like, it was, I always wanted to do some sort of weird sketch show on K-Bell. Where it'd be,
like, Saturday Night Live style?
Or some kind of weird, I was into Ernie Kovacs a lot back then. Ernie Kovacs.
Yeah. I don't know.
I thought it would be a strange idea to have some sort of interactive sketch show, like playing during those lunch things, because it was kind of it was a funny set, because like in the lunchroom they would have this big screen TV set up over to the side, and that would be where K-Bell would play and stuff.
Yeah. I remember Mr. Strickland. Did you ever work with him? He was like the guy who was the audio visual guy, and he was also the band teacher. He was crazy. You know who he looks like? Like the band teacher on The Simpsons. You know, like half bald kind of.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Crazy doc guy from Back to the Future, like a mix of like those people.
Oh yeah, it was. Well, so was he. So, I mean, I'm guessing he was kind of like the guy who presided over everything.
Right. He was the AV guy and the band teacher. But I knew him. I worked with him when I did the morning announcement.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a mean guy. He was pretty strict.
Yeah.
Just like his name.
Yeah. I was friendly with most of the teachers I had. I thought it would be good if I was. In case I did some smart ass shit later on in the year. Just like, you know, I'd just be like, hey, what's up, hey, never mind. Well, the only mean person I ever had was this typing teacher my last year. She, like, apparently had it in for me the first day I made a bad call. Like, she was talking about a friend, I think, one of a friend's relative's children passed away, and I just asked, well, how long ago was that, or something like that, and she, for some reason, took offense to that, and for the rest of the year, literally, she was literally breaking my balls every step of the way. It was just like, what the hell are you doing? This is a very awful time. It's kind of awful, you know. I've had my share of typing teachers, and they would let, you know, I never really mastered typing that well, but they, you know, helped me along the way. But she was a complete hag. So.
But you know how I learned how to type? My mom bought me this little toy typewriter called the Typewrite.
Mm-hmm.
It was like a learning tool.
Mm-hmm.
And it had the keyboard, like each fingers,
yeah.
Each key that had a certain finger was color-coded.
Yeah.
So there were like 10 different colors, and, you know, it told you which keys go with which finger.
Mm-hmm.
And then it would pass, it would have a little screen, and the screen would type letters, and you had to like type the letter without looking at the keyboard.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's what's kind of like the whole program of what, that's how you're supposed to learn how to type. Now, it's kind of like this thing. It's funny when, as like, the more I have written throughout the years, I mean, you get to this point where you just, like, it becomes this thing where you it's a sense memory thing. You feel, you know, it's just like becomes some kind of natural thing where you just know where all the keys are at.
Yeah.
You just go in. There's sometimes I'm just like writing and I'm not even looking at the keyboard, because that was always like the big fear, just like I would have to look at the keyboard. And there'd be times I'd be just writing and writing, and something I, like, I have not looked at the keyboards at all. So just like I just picked up on where everything is. So
sometimes the hardest thing actually about typing is figuring out where to start, you know, where your hands rest. And from there, you know, it's all like automatic response.
Yeah, exactly.
But like, sometimes that's the trickiest part, is just like resting your hands at the initial starting point.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, I mean, it's always, for me, it always starts with what the hell am I going to write, and then try to get it through, you know, just like try to find a way, and hopefully, you know, I got it, you know, writing, you always got like, sort of the thing where you really have to be right in the moment, and because there'll be times, like, it takes a long time to get things going, to have, you know, the right groove of what you want to say, especially when you're writing something like a review, like a movie review or something like that. There'll be times, like, I have no idea what the hell I'm going to say about this movie, but then, like, when you press yourself into it, it gets to a point where it just starts flowing, and hopefully, right. You know, hopefully it doesn't come to an abrupt halt, so you can just keep the wheel spinning in your head, to hopefully it'll come out. A lot of good things will come out.
Right, the stream of thought.
Yeah, stream of thought. But, you know, just, I guess we should get into more about you and what you're doing now, because one of the main reasons I wanted to have you on the show is to discuss your career as you mentioned earlier, as an artist. And
yeah.
You started talking about how you started getting into art in high school. I mean, I don't know if that's where exactly it began for you, but just where did the whole concept of you being an artist derive from?
Well, you know, it's interesting. There are different parts where I picked up on the idea, and then I would drop the idea, and it never really fully culminated until, I don't know, a few years ago. But, like, when I was younger, you know, all kids draw, but I saw Cinderella, the Disney cartoon movie, and I loved it. So I would spend my days drawing little Cinderellas with the little ball gowns and everything and the high-heeled glass slippers, and then I'd hang them in the garage. And so I'd go in the garage, and I created my very own little art gallery when I was, like, 5 years old. And I'd just go in there and stare, even in the dark, you know, because sometimes garages, the doors close, and it's all dark, and I would do that.
How old were you when this happened?
Yeah, I was young, like 5, 6 years old.
Oh.
Yeah. And then in high school, like I said, you know, I just doodled, like, you know, after geometry class, we learned to draw, like, the cubes and stuff, so I would just stick to that, cubes and rectangles and with dimension. And then in college, actually, my sophomore year in college, I started taking an art history class, and then I took a painting class, and then I took a printmaking class, and then I just started going to sketching classes, and about 3 years ago here in Argentina, I started taking class at an art studio with this teacher who's this lovely lady who's just, like, has infinite patience, and is a really good teacher, and, you know, like, just last year, she started teaching me perspective, because I never actually took any formal art classes. So, so now I'm like, learning, you know, kind of everything I should have learned as a child or growing up in college as an art student, which I never really was. My major was history of art.
Yeah.
So I really approached it more from the academic side at first.
Well, when you say you're in college, was this in London?
No, I spent a year in London. I did study art history in London, but I studied in Philadelphia. I got my degree from the University of Pennsylvania.
Yeah. Okay, and when while you were in Philadelphia, I mean, how did you would you say Philadelphia is a town where you can appreciate art?
Oh, yeah. They have some amazing museums and collections. They have, the Philly Museum of Art is, like, those big stairs are where Rocky climbs up and runs and everything.
Isn't the statue out there now?
Yeah, I think there's a statue of maybe, like, his footprints or something. Yeah. Like, emblazoned. And, and then there's the Frick Collection, which is in the suburbs of Philadelphia. They have an amazing Impressionist collection there.
Uh-huh.
It's a private collection. And they have the Rodin Museum.
Uh-huh.
You know Rodin, he was a sculptor.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and the school campus had an anthropology and archaeology museum. So there wasn't a lot of art of paintings, but there was, you know, anthropological stuff to look at, artifacts and things.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things in covering art, I've covered art a few times in my day, that there is the, there is mainstream art, like there is people, the Rodins and stuff at the Philadelphia Museum of Art, and there's also, you know, the more underground outlaw art
street art.
Street art and all that stuff. Was there a fair amount of that in Philadelphia as well?
Philly has a big anarchist community, especially West Philly, which is where the campus is. It was more of a music scene, really, in terms of art, not so much visual art.
Uh-huh.
In terms of underground.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's an Ivy League school, so it has a very alternative current to it, but it's also very academic, very mainstream, very proper. Here in Argentina, there's a big undercurrent of like, you know, street art and what they call arte callejero, which is street art.
Uh-huh.
And it's very fun. There's tons of graffiti, like artistic graffiti, really good art that it's like, you know, on walls and spray painted, and the government lets them.
Okay, and well, before I get to Argentina and their art, how do you get over to London?
Oh, I did a study abroad. I studied abroad at the Courtauld Institute of Art.
Uh-huh.
It's an important art history school.
Yeah.
And it's part of the UCL, University College London.
Yeah.
And they have an important art collection, too, that actually I didn't really get to see very much of because it was on tour. I think it was on tour in Japan that year.
Yeah.
But they have some drawings, some Renaissance drawings, like Michelangelo and Rembrandt and all these important artworks.
Mm-hmm. I mean, what were the spots in London that you were feeling the most?
You mean, like, outside of school?
Yeah.
Well, let's see. I liked going dancing. With my friends, I had some American friends in the dorm,
mm-hmm.
and we would go dancing because clubbing is huge in London.
Yeah.
So that's what I did for fun.
Yeah.
And in terms of spots, I really liked the British Museum.
Mm-hmm.
I would go there, and I would I had like special permission to go into the library, and they would give me white gloves, and I could personally handle like old drawings like I mentioned, like Renaissance drawings,
mm-hmm.
and look at them, you know, with a magnifying glass and like draw them if I wanted to and just study them, and that was an incredible experience.
Yeah, me thinking about like the dance in the club and everything. I mean, if you go in any of those spots in Philly like the TLA and Electric Factory and the Trocadero, those places.
In Philly, I think I only went dancing like one night right before I left, and I don't remember where it was. It was some club on South Street, but it was to hear that DJ, Josh Wink. You know, he's pretty big.
Oh,
he's
yeah, Josh. DJ. Yeah, Josh. Yeah. And, with him and King Britt used to run, that Ovum, I believe, right, Ovum recording label.
You
know King Britt?
No, I don't remember him. I remember Josh Wink's name.
Oh.
But, yeah, I even saw him in my year in London. I went to Paris because my grandmother was staying there for a while. And I was there, and I went dancing to a big rave in Paris. And Josh Wink was there spinning music.
Paris. Wow. Jeez. Wow. How was Paris? You're like the second person in a week I've spoken to about Paris.
Oh, Paris is lovely. I love Paris. I haven't been there in about 4 years, but I used to go more often. It's a beautiful city, and the food is just delicious. I love French cheese. I love it.
Yeah, well, how are the people? Do they smell nice?
I try not to smell them, but I haven't heard good things about French, bath etiquette. So, I don't know. The French shower, the famous French bath. You know about that, right? Hello?
What is that?
They say that the French bath is when you don't bathe and you just put deodorant on or perfume on to cover up the stink. That's what they call a French bath.
That's what you call a lonely middle-aged man bath as well.
Is that how you bathe yourself, Craig?
No. Jesus. The funny thing is the older you get, you realize it's like how vital just washing is, I told a person a couple of days ago, this is actually, I said, like, hey, you're nice, you keep yourself clean, and just, because when you get older, you're like, people, both men and women go after people for the wrong reasons, like, oh, they have this, they have that, but do they wash their ass? Do they take the time to get in the shower, go in between their legs and wash, and scrub in that AB connection, that ass ball connection, and just make sure, make sure it's perfect. Because I get self-conscious when I'm having, did my daily, taint scrubbing. And
yeah, plus it's nasty. You know, you don't feel good if you're all dirty down there. It's gross.
Yeah, I remember I was in New York. I was in New York not too long ago, and I was going in and out. I was going outside, and like I didn't shower, and it just like I just and like New York is like just walking and going all over the place. So just like that mustiness builds on you immediately to the point where you have to. Like I'm shocked. It's not like, you know, shower campgrounds all around New York. It's like you get musty with a quickness down there. I don't know if you ever had that experience, but
yeah. Well, the cities, you know, the city grime is just unavoidable. Like people who live in big cities like New York or Buenos Aires or even Philly too. You know, you're out on the street if you take public transport, which I do.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're out and, like, sometimes it's really crowded and everybody's pressed up against each other and you start sweating. And
yeah.
It's just horrible, you know. You get home and you're just like, ugh, I have to, like, wash all the city grime off of me.
Yeah, especially if you're fat. You just, like, you know, so you just, because you just easily either fat and have, problems with social interaction, which makes you sweat easily. So just build this aura, this glow of mustiness.
Right.
It's just not right. But
fat or skinny, you know, everybody gets dirty. And personal hygiene is so important.
Yeah, definitely. When did we get to talking about this? But is the French and whether or not they smell? Yeah, because I was about to say like how did that even come into play? The French just decide if that is a thing that they don't wash.
I don't know if that's true. Maybe it used to be true. I mean, it'd be interesting to see if it's still true, you know, because customs change and people change. Mm-hmm. So I'm not really sure. But, yeah, they do have a reputation for being stinkers.
Oh, man. I think for most beds, that's basically maybe a nasty rumor created by Francophobes.
Maybe.
Could be, pissed off that the, you know, French got all the, like, good food and Catherine Deneuve, so they just started making all that shit up.
Yeah, but I tell you, I like France. I like France better than England.
Really?
Yeah, I do, personally.
I mean, French people have good teeth?
Well, no, I don't know. I like the food. I like the culture. You know, I like the language. And at Bel Air, I studied French.
Yeah.
So, not that I don't like English. Of course I do. But I don't know. I personally have, like, a better time in Paris.
Yeah.
But I grew up there. I didn't grow up there. But, like, my grandmother used to live there sporadically.
Yeah.
So I would go and visit her, like, all throughout my life. So, for me, it's kind of, like, familiar.
Yeah, and plus, you know, I would assume being that, you know, you've been in both places, there is this huge difference in terms of how they treat culture. I mean, French is often seen as France is more often seen they treat their culture in a very sophisticated romantic light as opposed to England. I mean, you mentioned the food. I mean, as far as I can tell, there isn't really such a thing as English cuisine.
Yeah. Well, there's the fish and chips. That's about it, I think.
Fish and chips, bangers and mash. You know,
And the shepherd's pie or something like that?
Yeah, shepherd's pie. Haggis is a Scottish thing. Yeah. British chocolate.
No, they just... Oh, sorry. I was going to say, they just opened a fish and chips restaurant here in Buenos Aires. And all the expats are, like, raving about it. They're all so excited.
Yeah. Just fish and chips. I mean, it's just like, it's funny. I remember when I started getting, you know, trying to see about, like, it's kind of, is it difficult to even get, because fish and chips, like, decent fish and chips, even in England, because, like, I remember, like, his fish and chips is just, like, a couple of pieces of fish and some fries wrapped in newspaper.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They have really good French fries there. Chips, as they call them.
Yeah,
they're good. Yeah, I would go get some of those. I never actually got the fish and the chips. I would just get the chips.
Yeah.
but they were good. I don't know what to tell you about the fish and chips.
Because it's always seemed like it's a weird thing where it goes, like, when I started hearing about fish and chips, and I'm just like, you would go get fish and chips in Houston and just be like, I'm assuming the fish and chips are better in England than they are over here, because there's not really any pizzazz to fish and chips. Just two pieces of fish and fries, and that's mainly it.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I mean, the thing is, like, if you think about it, maybe the reason isn't that it's just, like, so delicious that it's so popular in England, but because England's an island, you know, so they probably have a lot of fish easily accessible.
Oh, yeah.
So maybe it's not, like, a flavor thing. Like we're saying, you know, the English cuisine isn't fabulous.
Well, yeah, like I was saying, like, they take, you know, the whole system of they take the fish and the chips and wrap up in newspaper. I've always gotten, you know, this idea I've heard that it's just usually just something to, it's like fast food over there in England. Just you get fish and chips somewhere, you just slather them, that you just get them and just get on the go, and that's really it.
Well, the place that, like, we would go, me and, like, the fellow students, was a place, I think it was over by a park or something, and so you just go and get it, and like you said, I would get the chips, and they came wrapped in a little cone, a newspaper cone, and then you just eat that walking, you know, there wasn't tables or anything, there was just to go, like a little booth in the wall, and you go and get it, and...
Yeah.
Yeah.
As opposed to in France, where even the everything's in butter, and it tastes good.
Yeah, well, I mean, France has, like, the little street crepes.
Yeah.
You can go and just get, like, a crepe du fromage or Nutella crepe and, you know, just walk down the street, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But, yeah, France is a little bit more fancy cuisine.
Yeah. Well, let's go back to Philly. Like, got any cheesesteaks way down there?
Yeah, I did. You know, I tried. I was in college and, you know, I was a girl, so... I would watch what I ate, but I got a couple of cheesesteaks, and they were really good.
Yeah. Gino's?
I think so. It was one down on South Street. I think it might have been that one. Yeah, that's a real famous one, isn't it?
Yeah. Man, whenever I would go to Philly, just like, you know, I would be that complete tourist asshole and just find places to get cheesesteaks. It would be fine. Like, I would stay with a friend, and we would walk over to a place, and I just say, hey, just get a cheesesteak. I'm pretty sure the people in the back are like, oh, here goes one of these sons of bitches. Get, like, cheesesteak and everything. But
I liked the coffee shops in Philly.
Yeah.
They had some good coffee shops. I actually worked at one for a while.
How was that?
It was fun. I loved being a barista.
Well, you know, you say barista, so it got me thinking, was it like an actual coffee shop? Was it like a diner coffee shop, or was it like a, you know, the hipster coffee nook?
Yeah, it was a hipster coffee nook. But this is back in the 90s, so it was like pre-hipster, you know?
Yeah.
Hipsters didn't exist.
Okay.
Down with the hipsters.
Yeah.
But we were cooler. We were, I don't know what to call us, but we were like, I don't know what, the alternative crowd? What were we? We didn't have a name, but yeah, it was just a little coffee house in West Philly, close to campus. And, you know, it had a couple of tables, and we would make coffee and bagel sandwiches and just, you know, just healthy coffee house stuff. People would come in, study, read, chat.
Okay, and well, just I mean, were you're doing that in college?
Yeah, while I studied.
Okay. Well, I guess now you get into, like, how'd you get down to Argentina? Just because didn't your mother was born in Argentina?
Yeah, my mother was born in Argentina, my father was born in Argentina, and I was born in Argentina.
Mm-hmm.
So, I came down here. Well, you know, just things got kind of crazy in Houston, and I kept getting beat up by these Mexican girls every time I would go out. So it happened twice. So I was like, I think I've got to get my shit together. And so I decided to move here. And I, because I was living at home with my dad, and I wasn't really working, and I wasn't doing anything in Houston. So I moved here and came to live with an aunt and my cousins until I got on my own 2 feet. And then, I found my own. I lived in an apartment that my family gave me. And I just started figuring out what to do, you know, and took a while, but it was, now I'm okay. Now I teach English. I've been teaching English for a good long 5 years or something. And I paint, and you know, having shows and more important galleries and getting to know my family, that was a big cause of, like, you know, why I wanted to move here.
Okay, and I'm still trying to figure out about the Mexican girls.
Yeah, well, it was like drunken bar fights, you know. I was drunk and they were drunk and they just like punched me and I didn't like it and it got a little crazy and I was out of control, you know. I was just like a drunken party girl and I was like, I have to get my shit together or I'm going to get myself killed in like some stupid party or something that I shouldn't even be at.
So, let's talk about, can we talk about this for a while? Like, where did that come from, the drunken party girl thing?
Oh, because I used to be a drunken party girl.
But where did that come from? Why were you a drunken party girl all of a sudden?
Well, it was in the past. This was like 10, 15 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I was young. You know, I was in my 20s, and that's what people do. They drink.
Yeah.
And go to parties.
Okay. So.
Well, it wasn't a party. It was actually bars.
Just bars.
Yeah. And, you know, in Houston, there's a lot of rough Mexican gangs that are, like, infiltrating the city because there's a whole border problem with Mexicans and the illegal Mexicans, the illegal immigrants.
Yeah.
They're not exactly well-behaved.
Mm-hmm.
So, they started attacking me, and it was dangerous. So I was like, I have to, like, leave.
Wow. That's kind of like the idea that you just had for yourself. Like, I need, you know, in order for me to change my life somewhat, I have to leave the country.
Yeah, pretty much. That's how I felt, you know, because I was young and I was bored. Yeah. And I was still in Houston. You know, I grew up in Houston. I mean, we went to school together.
Yeah.
I'd been there and, you know, I was kind of a lost soul. And I was just like, I'm going to go and start new. But I didn't want to go, like, to China or to Europe, you know, by myself where I didn't know anyone. So I chose to come to Argentina because this is where I was born, and I really wasn't very familiar with it. You know, I would come and visit on vacation for, like, a few days every couple of years with my family, but I really hadn't spent much time here, and I was born here. So in a sense, I was looking for myself and looking for my roots and, you know, looking for a better life.
And so, I mean, how did you, trying to see about the drinking part of your life. I mean, I believe you curbed it slightly. Like, weren't you in AA at one point?
Oh, no. That lasted like a month.
Really?
No, I really wasn't in AA. No, now, I mean, I've been sober for a year, and I just decided that I didn't want to drink anymore.
Yeah, I mean, well.
I wasn't like a raging alcoholic. I would just party, you know, go out drinking and. Yeah. Have a couple too many and that kind of thing. It wasn't like wake up at 9 and get drunk. No, I was never that.
Okay, just so. Well, just.
No, it was.
Yeah.
I don't know. It was like not as bad as Lindsay Lohan, you know? That poor girl's really fucked up.
Yeah, she has problems.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just trying to see just like how you going about yourself now. I mean, we could talk about the artwork, which I've been meaning. I've been trying to find the exact way to slide into that because observing your artwork, one of the things I find so particular and interesting about your work is that there's a boldness. There's striking boldness. And the best thing I find with a lot of Latin art, that there is like there seems to be a heaviness in the coloring that that really brings about the texture in your pieces. I mean, I don't know, what would you say influenced your work, and and how would you even describe your work? But I guess it just seems to me a very bold, striking thing that you have embraced with your artwork.
Yeah, it is. It's lots of people who see it are like shocked by the colors, but it's shocked in a good way. You know, they like it. And it's like I say, like my main thing about my painting is that, you know, I take ordinary subjects, because they are pretty much based on real world things. Like they're realists. They're realistic, but they're done with what sort of a fauvous color, like a fake color. But it's kind of like my way to take reality and paint it a prettier picture. You know, like to improve reality and make it a little zanier and a little more special.
Zanier. I mean, would you say there is some like the quirkiness to your work?
Definitely. Yeah, definitely. And that's what I like. I mean, I don't want to be, you know, realistic or, like, I admire people who have that ability in their art, you know, to make something look like a photo. You know, that's incredible.
Yeah.
But that's not mine. Mine is more sort of, I don't know, almost cartoony, you know, in the colors, like these bold, wild colors that are just not very realistic, but I like them. You know, I wish the world looked the way I painted it, because that would be cool.
I mean, don't you use photos to... You know,
yeah, I use photos to base my drawings. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's why they're, like, based on realism.
Mm-hmm. But more heightened, exaggerated realism.
Like a fantastical realism, you know, almost magical. Like, just, bolder and like a wow factor and just fun, you know, just fun and liberated and just like kind of like to create sort of an alternate reality or something of like a more colorful world.
I'm trying also to see just how things have been with you as an artist, because I believe you're also you told me about your teaching now.
Yeah, teaching English, not art.
Okay. English for what? What are we talking about?
Just English to adults, business English, or just grammar English, conversation mm-hmm. classes.
Yeah,
because, you were asking how my art's going, and it's going, but, you know, I can't sell a painting for very much, and I don't have a lot of people interested in buying them, so to make some money, I teach English.
I mean, work. You find that as a young artist trying to make it as an artist, it has to be some sort of criteria or something that, you know, I've often found that unless that person is dead, then, you know, that's when the art really starts to sell. Maybe that's kind of like an old theory or something like that, but it's just like you find it, I mean, how is it for you, you know, being a young artist and trying to make your way as an artist?
It's difficult, you know. That's why this art show that I'm at now at the Centro Cultural Recoleta, it's like the cultural center of Recoleta, and it's a very important art space. And this was a group show. It was a contest, and I presented some images of my paintings, and they selected one of them, and they had 60 artists. But there were about 380 applicants.
Mm-hmm.
So of the 380, they chose 60, and I was one of them. So it's a big honor, you know, and we'll see where it goes from there. I mean, there are lots of those contests, but the odds are pretty big. You know, it's hard to, like, to be accepted, but that's what I'm going to keep trying for. And I don't know, I'd like to, like, have some international shows, maybe at a gallery in New York or Paris or who knows, anywhere, you know. I would love that. And just start to make a name for myself and be able to start selling my paintings at a good price.
Mm-hmm.
That's the goal. I'm not sure, you know, how to make that happen, but that's what I'm hoping for.
Well, you know, I'm not an artist. I'm not art collector or just somebody who knows what the hell to do with art. I just know what I see, and just I mean, you find that it isn't really exact. You know, it's interesting. It's interesting. Like this point, you want to take your art and try to find exact science in terms of trying to find ways to make art sell. I mean,
yeah, but it's not a science. I mean, it's not a science. It's art.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. But like, you wish that there was a science for it, because I mean, yeah. What you say is like Argentina, you know, Buenos Aires. I can't say it as you know, off the flow, off the tongue as you can with it. But Buenos Aires, I mean, would you say that is a town that is pro art? Is there just like a big art?
Yeah, I think so. There's a lot of museums, and there's a lot of artists. They have gallery nights once a month,
mm-hmm.
you know, where all the galleries are open and they invite you to go and walk around, and people go. But in terms of selling and making a name for yourself, the best thing is to become known internationally. Because I'm not sure how much money people actually put into the arts here in Argentina.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm guessing you're still doing what you can. Enjoy, you seem to be enjoying yourself, especially now that you have you're a lot less of yourself than you were before.
Yeah, that's good. It helps me feel better about myself, you know, like just doing what I need to be doing and taking care of myself is that's always the better way to live.
Yeah, would you say like the alcoholism or just the drinking, if you want to call it that? I don't know if they have full fledged alcohol problem, but I mean, was that kind of the most attributed to your weight gain?
You know, it could have been, because I was pretty regular about drinking in the evenings,
mm-hmm.
and it could have been because, you know, you drink and then you don't feel like going to exercise, and it's got a lot of calories because it's pure sugar.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's like drinking like a million Coke glass, bottles of Coke or whatever.
Yeah.
So it's difficult. Yeah. I mean, it's definitely helped, and quitting drinking has definitely helped, and getting to the weight loss, you know, just losing all the weight and getting in shape. And I would recommend no alcohol for anyone, honestly. I mean, I know people enjoy their drinks, but it's so much better just to deal with life and, you know, just be sober all the time and be in control and not, you know, go on a mind vacation or escape your problems or whatever.
What if you need to drink just to not knock people upside the head when they do stupid shit?
Well, then you should go to an anger control issue therapy. You should go watch Charlie Sheen's show.
What if that makes you want to drink even more?
I know, it's a bad show. I've seen it a couple times.
I don't want to go down that road anytime soon. I have to. Like, I'm kind of a part-time TV critic, so just, like, I try to avoid shows like that really a lot.
Oh, I like TV. I watch a lot of TV, but I guess I'll have to leave that for another interview, but...
Yeah, yeah.
I love TV, too. I'm not a critic, but I do criticize.
Yeah, I mean, that's what we all do. So, yeah. I mean, where can people find you online, if I, you know, because usually the time when I let the guests shout out websites and social media sites where they all are at.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I have a website. It's not the most up-to-date, but it's the only one I've got. I also have a Facebook art page, so that's one way, with just my name. Mm-hmm. And the other website is, you know, www.paula-lifschitz. .com. And so you have to know how to spell my last name. But you'll write it out, won't you?
Yes, I will. And aren't you on Twitter?
Oh, yeah, I'm on Twitter. I don't really use it a lot, but you can contact me on Twitter. And that's Paula Lifts, LIFS.
Yeah. So you're not going to update that Saludos blog anytime soon?
Oh, my blog? I don't know, maybe. I'm pretty lazy about the internet, but
yeah.
Possibly. Yeah, people say that's a good way to reach out to people is through blogs.
Oh, yes, yeah, it is, and just various other places, and this is where they can all find you, and you can, and hopefully people will look at your artwork and say, hey, I want some of that.
That would be awesome. Yeah, requests are always taken.
Yeah.
And you can, send me a picture and tell me that's what I'm working on now is a portrait of a mother with her son.
Uh-huh.
So I have a picture that I'm working from, and then I'm going to, paint it. I was actually out at the park today sketching it. So,
yeah. All right, cool, then. That is very good. So did this turn out well for you, ma'am?
Oh, yeah.
It was
good. Yeah, we covered some unexpected things, but, I do believe in honesty. So.
Yeah, well, I didn't take you by surprise on any of the questions I had. Just...
Well, it's okay. I've lived quite a life. I mean, it's pretty crazy, so there's a lot to say.
Well, you don't have to, it's not anything to be ashamed of or anything. Hopefully I didn't get you in any awkward spots or anything.
Yeah, it'll be fine.
Are you sure? I don't want to leave it on a.
Oh no! Don't worry. It's all cool.
Oh, okay then. If you say so, All right.
Okay, so I can't wait to see this on your website.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm just gonna close it out here, and hopefully. It'll all turn out well and stuff and not weird. But thank you for taking time to do this.
Sure. Thank you for interviewing me. I'm honored.
Hey, this is what I do because I ain't got much to do anymore. But
I'm sure you'll find something. Good luck with your job hunt.
Thank you very much. And let me close this out here. As always, this is Craig B. Lindsay sign off saying, I haven't had a good time since 1997. And, I'm going to deal with that at some point in time, but not now because I need to get some fish and chips. Yeah, because this conversation got me in the mood for some fish and chips for some strange reason, and now I'm going to have to get some, and that's sad. But we'll see how it goes.